everybody, and welcome to another episode of Between the Lines, brought to you by Kearney County Library. I'm your host, Richard, and we have some special guests with us today. We have Mark Gowdy, the CED of the Kearney County FSA office, back with us again. So, Mark, thank you for coming in again, doing this with us.
Well, Richard, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
We had enough fun last time that he's willing to do it again, folks. So hopefully we can do this on a regular basis. We've been having fun. Mark also brought in a guest with him today with us. We have Chevelle Bowman. She's with us. She's the county operations trainee. So, Chevelle, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And one of the things we want to jump into is, who is Chevelle? Some of the individuals that have been to the office or maybe out and about have probably seen Chevelle here and there, and they might say, who's this new person? So, if you wouldn't mind, Chevelle, tell us how you came to be in the Kearney County and at the FSA office there in town.
Well, I am in the management training program, and it is a six-month training program, and I am originally from South Central Kansas, and so they wanted us to get a diverse look at the state. We will eventually be placed anywhere in the state of Kansas, so they wanted us to have a feel for other counties. And so Mark was gracious enough to have me out for a couple of weeks and teach me all about Kearney County and what it's like.
What differences have you seen between South Central Kansas and Western Kansas? Because there are kind of some differences, and people that have made the trip probably have seen them, but some that haven't. What have been some of your observations?
You know, just going out and looking at a lot of the different fields, there's a huge difference. I expected everything to be flat. I was really surprised when he took me down to the sand dunes and what it looked like, and just the diversity in this county in general. The northern part of the county is very different from the southern part of the county, so it's been very interesting to see that.
Have you ever seen soapweed before?
No. No, Mark's taught me a lot this week.
I'm sure that's not the only thing that's probably different, but yeah, we have quite a bit in the sand hills there.
We do. I figure I've only got 2 weeks for Chevelle to fall in love with Western Kansas, so yeah, She'll want to come out this direction.
There you go. It's comfortable.
Yes.
It is.
We enjoy it. But it does take a special type of person. I mean, you have to enjoy the country, and that's one of the things. I came from the Oklahoma City area and came up here, and that was one of the questions people asked me is, are you going to be comfortable? It was like, I grew up in a small town, so this was like home to me. So I've been comfortable for several years here now. Won't go into how many because you don't need to know my age. With you coming here for the management trainees section, what led you to come here for people that are out there that are interested? Because you know, this opens up a different area that some people into agricultural studies, or if they're interested in the field, how do they get involved with this program? Is there any special type of training you had to do beforehand? Can you explain the steps to become where you're at today?
Sure. With FSA, there's a couple of different ways you can go about it. You can go through college and get your associate's or a degree in business ag or other areas. And you can go through the training program with no FSA background at all. It's a year-long training program for those that don't have that experience. For me, I became a program technician in the Sedgwick County FSA office. And so I've worked 20 years in that office as a program technician. And then I applied for the management program, and I'm going through only a six-month training program due to all the experience that I already have within the agency.
So even if you are a young person, you can do this, or if you've been in the office for a while, it's open to somebody that's been there for a while and has the experience. So that's kind of a good information to know. So you went that route. I'm assuming you've been enjoying it. You're here with us.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the things that's unique maybe about the Farm Service Agency. It's one of the agencies, federal agencies available that a person based on either education or experience or what do I say, performance, can have the opportunity to move up through the pay scales regardless maybe of what their background was, as long as they're willing to either have that education or, like Chevelle, start at the program technician level, learn the industry, learn the agency and the programs, and then based on her performance, she was selected for the management program. And so that's a great opportunity then that she can now move, you know, and that way we're able to get some great employees that might not have had the opportunity for education younger, but have great potential.
So this isn't, I'm here, can you hire me? Here I am. Mark mentioned you were selected, so there is a little bit of a process, and it's not everybody can get there. It does go through a committee.
Oh, yes. Our state committee hires the trainees, and it's a pretty, I believe it's a pretty rigorous program. I mean, I'm guessing there were probably 35-plus applicants for a position. I think they hired 5 or 7 this time.
7.
Yeah, I think they originally planned on hiring 5.
So but congratulations based, then.
Yeah, thank you.
And it was based on the quality of the applicants. They went ahead and added 2 people to that. Traditional positions.
Okay, that's cool. With you being in South Central Kansas, as you mentioned, was your background in agriculture or were you a city gal?
Yes, I was from the city. Ah. I had no idea anything about agriculture when I got hired.
So it is your experiences through the office and everything. So, and that's not to say that's bad. It's just saying that, you know, you don't have to be somebody from a farm because if your interest is your interest, whether you're from the city, from the farm, you know, we have people that are in Kansas that want to go to oceanography.
Exactly.
You know, so that's just to point out that you don't have to be a specific type of person. If you have the interest, go for it. And you might be fortunate like Chevelle has been in getting to the program. So if you're out there wanting to look at some new options, this might be a way for some of the younger kids and some of the ones that are wanting to make a change might be willing to.
Absolutely.
I'm more of a city boy. I'm sorry. But my daughter's more of the country aspect. So with the changing, we've been talking about people coming into new programs.
Mm-hmm.
You've been accepted into the training program again. Like I said earlier, congratulations. Job well done, with Mark said.
Thank you.
Very well done. But with going on with new programs, what's happening, we have young and I won't say old, but middle-aged that are kind of getting into the farming industry. They might be coming back to a family farm or they might just a change of lifestyle. They just want to see what happens. But for these beginner farmers, is there any process that the FSA might have to help them out to start their endeavor?
Yes, actually, our farm loans program does have a beginning farmers loans, and beginning farmer in the FSA world is someone who has operated a farm for not more than 10 years. So if you are a producer out there and you've gotten into this world of agriculture and you're only a few years in, you can still qualify as a beginning farmer as long as you don't exceed that 10-year mark. There's a lot of opportunities for low interest loans and guidance there for them. So, yeah.
And then also in some of the different programs, we also have provisions for beginning farmers where they may have not been able to meet some of the requirements, cropping history, for example, or maybe some of the even insurance requirements that we have waivers for those folks that would qualify in that beginning farmer category. And I love what you brought up, Richard, when you said the maybe more seasoned or middle-aged folks that we're actually seeing more of that where people come back. Maybe they had a career in another industry and because of circumstances have come back to the family farm like you had mentioned.
Right.
And this is a great opportunity for them maybe to get their beginning in the farming industry in their family farm even though they've been away from it for a while.
Okay. And if they come back to a family farm, how to put this? Like I said, I'm a newbie for some of these agribusiness type stuff, so bear with me. When they come back to a family farm, do they have to be separate from that family farm to qualify as the beginners? Because the family farm is established, and that's within, if let's say it's their parents, that's within their parents. Now, if that changes ownership, does that begin a new farm? Or if the family still retains it under the parents, do they have to separate it out to be considered new? Or how would that all work out? Because I know that we're talking about family farms. I just want to make it clear for the people coming back that might be doing this.
Sure. I'll start. And I know that Chevelle's got experience in what we would consider an eligibility situation. But it really depends on how their farming operation is structured. We've seen both ways where somebody might come in and become maybe a partner or even start as an employee, for example, in a family situation. Or they become a contributing member, not necessarily a partner. It might be a corporation, but now they bring something to the table in the form of either labor or management to get their start. But we've also seen where maybe they come back and part of the farm is partialed off, and they start in their own name, maybe their own part of the ground that now they're becoming what we consider actively engaged in farming under their own name.
Okay.
Have you seen that, Chevelle?
Yes.
So like Chevelle just acknowledged that we've both seen it both ways. But one thing we might point out that we talked about the beginning farmer loan. It's important for them, if they're interested in that program or any of the farm loan programs, is contact their FSA office. We'll put them in touch with the farm loan servicing staff. Right, Chevelle?
Correct.
And then they can advise them as to what programs they may or may not qualify for, or they might have a whole different direction that they could recommend.
Correct.
So this is one where, like you said, contact a local office or go in, because it's not just a phone call. I'm a new farmer. Let me start farming and help me out. They need to come in, establish that they are here. They're here for hopefully a long period of time, if not for the duration. And there's paperwork and steps that need to be filled out. And then on the backside, there's responsibilities for them when they do receive some type of help that they're going to have to follow through as well.
Correct. And with FSA, we are all one family, but farm loans, they're the experts in that area. So as program technicians or CEDs in the county office, we like to refer to the farm loan experts in the beginning farmer loans and of that nature, because they are more adverse to all of the rules and regulations on that. We don't want to advise somebody.
Okay, so contact the local office here in town, and you're going to have to give the number because I don't know it right off the top of my head, but we can give it later. But if you want to give it right now as well, I know it's
355-7911.
7911. So 355-7911. So if you're interested in something like that, be sure to contact them or stop by the office. They're on Highway 50 or Santa Fe Trail Boulevard,
yep,
right next to Flashbacks. You can stop in and visit with them about anything like that. But to get back into being new to everything, unless you have anything else you wanted to bring out about some of the farm loans.
No, that's fine.
Okay. To kind of get back into time with the young people coming in, they will go back to they come back to the family farm. And let's say they do separate out. They become their own deal. There's no question that it's new. Within this land that they receive, they have CRP land.
Okay.
And they're wanting to try to transition and maybe break new ground or bring crops back. What's the transition for that? Or if they've been established for a while and they have some CRP land that they want to bring back into production, what's the steps to start breaking that ground again?
Well, ideally, the contracts are going to expire. And so they'll wait for the expiration for the contract to expire, and then they would contact our office. We would consult with NRCS, which is our technical service provider, partners in this program, and then they would develop a conservation plan to bring the ground back into crop production in a responsible manner, in a good stewardship method. Now, if the opportunity comes up and they want to maybe break the ground early, we have provisions for that. They'd have to purchase the ground out of the contract because they've agreed to a contract with the federal government. We've been paying them rent now,
right,
to keep it out of production. And if the agreement is for a 10-year contract or a 15-year contract and they choose to break the ground out early, then they would be responsible repaying those payments because that was our agreement. Now, along with that, sometimes they actually have ground that's never been farmed. And I think I see that more. Chevelle, I don't know how it is in South Central.
Yeah, there's a lot of times that we do have ground that's broken out that's never been farmed.
Mm-hmm. And we see that more when we do have maybe people coming back into the operation or maybe purchase some ground that haven't farmed. And again, we'd want to put them in contact with the NRCS office. They would have to do a determination on whether the ground is highly rotable or not and what provisions need to be taken so that the ground is farmed in a responsible and good stewardship manner.
We've been discussing, the CRP, bringing it back into production. What happens if a land changes landlords or how they are going to be operating? Because that's kind of a little bit different than CRP coming back in. What do they need to know about those type of programs or if there's anything available for them?
Well, I think one of the most important things is if they are going to be making changes or have made changes to their farm, the way they operate their farming operation is, and that include everything you just mentioned, whether it's a change of ownership, whether it's change of operators, maybe it's bringing new people into the operation, then, or maybe sometimes just changes in shares. Maybe an agreement is changed. One of the things we see sometimes is if the let's say a landowner passes the ground on to beneficiaries, now the shares change because now they split that original landowner's percentage.
Right. Okay.
So any changes along those lines, or even maybe how they have acquired their equipment or how they hire their labor, any changes to their farming operations from how they certified with their FSA office, it's important for them to notify us that there have been changes and then come in and update their farm operating plan to make sure that they're not putting any of their program benefits at risk. Because with the changes and some of the new guidance from the national office, particularly maybe with non-family farm partnerships, it's important that we are accurate in how we're representing them in the farm operating plan to make sure they don't jeopardize their eligibility for farm program benefits.
You were mentioning, having them come into risk of the program that they might be in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying what program, just whatever program they might be in. The risk involved, we kind of mentioned with CRP, if you change stuff, you might have to pay back some stuff. But is kind of like, is there anything else like three-strike rule kind of like type of system where, you've changed this, you didn't notify us, and you didn't notify us in a timely manner, you might be off that program for a year, 2 years. I don't know how many years. This is just off the top of my head. Is that kind of what you're talking about with the risk involved if they don't report timely on changes?
Yes, it definitely could affect not only the payments, their future payments, the programs they're involved with, but it could potentially affect payments they've already received if they haven't notified us timely. And it's particularly important we want to make sure that the folks that are eligible for the payments get their payments timely and accurately. And probably one of the most common things we see here in Kearney County, and Chevelle maybe, if it's different, in the counties you've worked in, that when that ownership changes, sometimes they don't notify the FSA office, and now instead of saying, the father who was a landowner got a third, maybe a typical share is third, two-thirds.
Okay.
And now he passed away last January. Nobody told us. And so when payments are issued in October, his third is supposed to have gone to his two kids or maybe to his spouse or maybe to a trust. And that happens a lot. People change from a individual to a trust. The okay. trust is supposed to receive the payments and the tax liability, but it went to the individual. And if we weren't notified of that change, payments were issued to the individual, and that could completely disrupt their financial picture.
Okay.
But then also, if it's been done errantly, then a repayment would be required back to the FSA. And unless we get it corrected, they could actually permanently lose those benefits. We'd like to avoid that.
Okay. And I was kind of alluding to the negative end of it, which you mentioned there at the last, but I want to reiterate that what you mentioned, it could help you as well. It's not necessarily a punishment. As the risk is a punishment, the risk is you might be hurting yourself out of a benefit. So it's not a negative thing when we say there's a risk. It might affect you mm-hmm. negatively, or if you file the paperwork properly and fast, it could help you, like you said, financially, because that money is kind of in limbo.
Oh, absolutely.
Until they receive it again. So, like you said, financial pictures, that's a concern for several families.
And sure.
Farmers. So again, just want to say that we're not saying, I didn't want to bring across that this is all negative stuff that will happen to you. You can lose out on some things too that you might be able to receive.
Oh, absolutely. And very, very rarely, extremely rarely is anything ever done intentionally or maliciously
right.
to mislead. A lot of times it's just they didn't think about, we needed to notify the FSA office that this is now in Mark Gowdy's estate instead of Mark Gowdy. Or, they're,
right.
it's very, I can't think of very many times ever that I've even heard of it being done maliciously or intentionally.
No, I think the main thing is, just when a new producer comes into the picture, they're not always educated. They don't realize that they need to contact the FSA office.
Okay.
And I think a lot of times that's the issue.
Sure.
Okay.
Or another example might be a lot of times if it may be in a couple situation, if the husband was the producer, he did all of the FSA business. And so especially if it's an untimely or an unforeseen event where they're passed, then their spouse a lot of times doesn't know what they did and what their responsibility is.
Yeah, so, and I feel like a lot of times when it is that situation, the spouse is very overwhelmed and almost afraid in a way to just address all these different things that we need to file. And so I think an FSA has done a very good job of trying to support those that do not have the knowledge of what they're supposed to do in the office and help walk them through all of our forms. I mean, we are the government. We do have a lot of forms, but we have good staff in all the offices, and they're conscious of that, and we'll walk them through it.
Okay. So if there's any changes, definitely get in touch with the office here in town and make sure those are
effective. We never mind question.
With some of the programs that are coming out and some of the filings that they have to do, we talk about make sure you're coming in, filing your paperwork, make sure it's up to date and everything. There are things that are coming up for individuals or families for just regular maintenance of what programs they're in. And one of these is one of the things we don't really like to talk about, but it's just a fact of life. And that's when something happens. And, you know, if you're looking out, you're driving your fields, checking them out, seeing what's going on. I remember my grandfather going out driving 25 miles an hour through I don't know how many miles of land just to look at the fields. It took us all day to see the fields, and we didn't cover all of them. But he was, you know, occasionally he would stop, check the ground, check the crops. I say I'm a city boy, but my grandfather farmed in the Elkhart area, so I did get some summers that way. But when some of the things that you don't like to see happens to your crops, you know, whether it's we want to see the rain.
Absolutely.
More times than not, we don't. Sometimes when we do see it, it's too much. All this damage that can occur, you know, how do they get in touch? Well, they get in touch with the FSA office. Yeah, they get in touch with the FSA office. But is there certain time frames where they're looking at getting in touch with you for, you know, if they don't want to wait till it actually happens, is there a way that if they see something coming, can they hit it off and say, you know, this might happen or it might not, but we need to let you know?
Sure. Richard, there's a couple different things that can happen. For FSA and the programs we have available, it's a natural disaster or weather events, I should say. Usually no control of the farmer or the producer to control it, either on grass or cropland. But one of the things that's important to do is notify us, you know, timely if there's going to be no loss. Or like you said, they think there's going to be no, so they're making a determination, looks like there's loss. And the requirement for us, if they have what's called a NAP policy, which is primarily on native grasses or forage crops, they've purchased NAP policies, and they're required, if there's going to be loss, to notify us either within 15 days of either the weather event that caused the loss or that they've made the determination it's going to be lost. They notify the FSA office, file a notice of loss on that acreage. We also encourage folks who don't have an NAP policy but to keep the integrity of their acreage history intact, if they make a determination of a loss, to notify us it's not for NAP, but they just notify us of a loss within 15 days of A, either the loss became apparent or the weather event, and we'll keep that on file. And then, like you said, maybe they think it's going to be bad. It looks like it's going to be lost. They've made that determination, and then maybe the weather does turn around and the grass recovers or the forage crop recovers, and they don't realize a loss. And then they, at that point, they really don't have to do anything with us other than they don't file for application of payment on the NAP policy.
Okay.
And on if it was not for NAP, again, if it's not destroyed, they've come in, they filed a notice, things turn around, the wheat recovered, and they're going to go ahead and harvest it. That's fine too. Unless it's destroyed, we don't do anything other than they filed a notice. All we have is on file. That they come in and made a determination that it could be a loss or it is a loss.
So it's a form of, you know, the farmers protecting themselves.
Absolutely. Keeps, like you said, it keeps the integrity of their cropping history intact.
And I want to make a separation. We're not talking about insurance. We're talking about just the land. And so you have a history. So if something's going about, because the insurance, a whole different ball game, you guys probably might get a little bit, but I don't want to touch that because that kind of gets – that's so many different laws and regulations. But this is something that they can file with you, keep track of what the land's doing, and it might help them with the insurance further down.
That's exactly right. That's, you know, a lot of time our insurance companies will look to to our offices for their crop certification, verify that that was planted. And then if they filed in those laws, now they, like you said, they protected themselves. And we can demonstrate to the insurance company that, no, this was filed timely. This is when the loss occurred. And this probably comes in more into play if they decide to do something else with that acreage that same crop year. And so it's important for them to file that notice. And then if insurance comes back and they can say, you know, we filed with FSA, here's a notice of loss. And if they hadn't, I guess, gotten a release from the insurance company, they would, at least we'd have a track record that integrity is intact, that they can say, planted it on this date, made a determination loss on this date, and here's what was reported to us. That's why it wasn't harvested.
We talked about I travel around with my grandfather. Of course, I no longer do. He's no longer with us. But just driving around, when, especially if we go towards outside of Garden City and we're going towards Jetmore, you know, I kind of made mention, you know, we want rain, but sometimes we get so much rain, it's like, oh my gosh, it's too much. When we go towards Jetmore, there's some sections over there where I see farmers that have these spots on their fields that are, you know, they have standing water.
Sure.
Is there any way that they can build that back up? Is that just lost income or food source just because, you know, that's just the way the ground's made? Mm-hmm. But it's kind of hard to see, and I know you guys are in the industry, so it's probably different for you, but for somebody just driving along, it's like, man, they lost quite a chunk of land that they could have planted. What happens with that section of that land? Is that just, that's just the way it is? Or what happens with things when you have that standing water, it seems like?
Well, a lot of times what you're talking about, yeah, Chevelle's teasing me. She goes, why do you call them waterways when there's no water out here? But, anyway. But the playa is what I think you're talking about, where you see those low areas. People, the official name is a playa lake, which is the technical term, I guess. But they're also called lagoons, mud holes, maybe buffalo wallas. And those are usually those low areas in those fields. And there's actually a specific soil type in the bottom of that area that was designed by our creator, I guess I'm going to say, that are a recharge source for our water source for the Ogallala Aquifer. And what happens is we've broken that ground out, we farm it, and there's a lot of times, maybe in a 10-year period, they might be able to harvest it one time.
Right.
Because even though we don't get as much moisture out here as we'd like, it just seems like either they're flooded out, you know, it's got water in it when they're trying to plant, or they get something planted and then the rain comes and floods it out and they replant, and then when it comes to harvest, it's wet again. And so the more farmers I talk to out here that do have those playa areas in their fields, it's amazing how few times in a 10 or 15-year period they're able to actually harvest a crop out of it. Well, we do have a program to answer your question, I guess, Richard, in a little bit longer method maybe than you desired. But
well, my question was kind of a long method, so go for it.
Okay. Right, then we're right on the same thing. But we do have what's in a CRP practice called a CP23A, or it's a playa lake practice. And what it does, Richard, allows that ground to be put back into a native grass mixture, and then to buffer the edges of it. And we can do what's called a 4-to-1 ratio of the playa soil type, and we can take that times 4 to put a buffer in. And that buffer allows any maybe sediment or runoff of the crop field around it to be buffered before it gets into the playa area, the low area of that spot. And the buffer can be shaped and designed in a way that makes it very farmable for them. So a lot of times this playa might be on the edge of a field.
Right.
Then we can either, I've seen some cases where we've been able to, with the buffer, just basically take out a strip along the edge of the field and just make it a straight line. I've seen where it's in the center of the field where we've squared it up or even done a round circle, whatever they like to, how they prefer to farm. And we can do it in a way that it's the widths around it are complementary to their equipment. And we can make it very user-friendly, but it's also, according to the Playa Lake people, that it's the number one recharge source for the Ogallala Aquifer. So the more of those we can put back into a recharge capacity or a working capacity, and we have to prevent the silting in it from the cropland stuff, mm-hmm. but the more we can put of those that we can put back into practice, the better chance we have to be maintaining the water level in our primary drinking source in this part of the state. So I'm a little bit passionate about this practice. It's an excellent practice. It's a 15-year practice. probably one of the easiest practices for maintenance and management purposes, because we really want it to be put back in just a natural state and then leave it alone. But it sure allows them, instead of being able to reap a harvest off of maybe once every 10 or 15 years, they get a rent payment every single year. And so instead of continually putting inputs into it every year and may or may not be able to harvest it. And the argument I get a lot of times is, when I cut the Milo off, that's the best Milo in the field. And I can't disagree with that, but how many times is it the best Milo? And does it average out over that period of time where you've actually put cost into it every year?
So you're looking at this as a long-term program of a kind of like a recycling or conservation program almost, where you said your main thing is to try to get the water back into the aquifer. This is one way to try to do that, to get it back into the land.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And our outdoor enthusiasts really like the program too, because it's a great spot for wildlife. You know, and of course, as you know, as far as the migratory birds, were right on the flyway. And so these can become also sources for them as well. And so it's, the only negative is well, that once every 10 or 15 years, I don't get a harvest out of it, or I got a farm around it. But we can sure work with folks with the buffer opportunity we have. And I think it's one of the most common sense CRP programs we have.
And this is one where it's like one of those areas where, you know, present time for several years, we haven't been getting the rain and water totals like we have in the year. So even though it's concentrated in one area, it's the aquifers, not just in one little spot, it's pretty much covers a pretty good size area. So in a sense, I guess that's a positive. So I was always looking at it as a negative. It's like, oh man, that's kind of harsh, but so I got a new light on that. So thank you.
You bet. We can definitely make lemonade out of that.
Well, we might want to sterilize it and purify first. I watch Dual Survivor. Don't drink dirty water. Before we leave off here, one of the things, because I know you guys are busy, we want to get back out with the people, everybody coming into the office. So, again, I appreciate taking the time out. So I know this does take time away from the farmers and from your offices. But some of the things that are coming up with the filing notices, some of the dates, they got a couple of months, but just to be prepared, there's a couple of dates coming up in April that I think you wanted to mention. We've been talking about CRP, and then some of the things that are involved with the CRP land as well. So what are some of those dates, and what are they needing to know about them?
Sure, Richard. One of the things is the annual management or maintenance practices that are required to be done, and that's we're required to have those completed before April 15th, which begins the primary nesting season. And so basically April 14th is the last day they can perform any of those management or maintenance practices, whether it's a burn or light disc or potentially grazing on those CRP contracts. And the primary nesting season just protects the game birds from April 15th to July 15th. And on almost every CRP practice available, they're restricted from doing any practices during that time frame. So if they were needing to get something done, we're starting to wind down now. We got about 6 weeks left, I guess, for them to do that.
And if you're like us, and you think you have plenty of time, but then you turn around, it's like, oh, I need to do that. So mark your calendars, you know, mid-April.
Yep, April 14th.
Let's say first week of April, you need to be doing some things if you need to.
I like the way you think.
Yeah. That way you're not caught too short there.
I've heard there are counties that people do put off things till the very last.
Never.
We would never do that. We're good. Yes, that's why we're always rushing at the end. We have some programs here that we turned around and it's like, oh, that's 2 weeks away. I might need to do something there. So time on the calendar seems like it will stretch out, but it doesn't for some reason. And if you have kids and school.
Zoom.
Yes. We've been visiting with Mark and Chevelle here of the FSA office. Again, all these things we've talked about, if you need any information, go to the office here in Lakin. It's on Santa Fe Trail Boulevard or Highway 50. It's just past the junction of 25 going further west. You have Flashbacks that is right next to it, so you can use that as a landmark. It's a little fast food place here in Lakin. You can go in, visit with them.
Absolutely.
If they're not there, they might be with somebody else, or they might be out with somebody. I'm sure you know, it's with everybody else. They'll get back with you. If they're there, they will take the time, visit with you. If you can't get into the offices, you can always give them a phone call at 355-7911. Mark, he's been more than gracious when I call him out there. He's like, oh, no, not again. But no, he's actually taking my call. So we appreciate all that. So he will take your calls. He'll visit with you. That's what they're there for, is to be a help for everybody. So don't forget that. Chevelle's in the management program. When things go sideways, what happens? Uh-oh. Caught her.
Yeah.
You mean like that?
Yeah. What?
Well, we find a solution.
Yeah.
There you go.
We do. We figure it out. I call Mark.
Well, that's important to know, because being a manager, you don't always have the answers. Sometimes you have to find people that do have the answers.
That's exactly right.
So, and that's the case with some of these programs. We've talked about the farm loan. This is one area where they did mention, you know, there is a specific person. They do come down, I think it's the third Thursday.
Right.
You can visit with them, or you can call them.
Absolutely.
But you can contact the office there and get the number if you need them before that date. They are here to help facilitate your needs, so do not forget them. If you're not able to get in, you're wondering what's happening, what do you, as the office there, how do you contact people? How do you notify them what's happening, or and if they need to sign up for some of these things, what's sure. available for them?
Well, other than this fantastic podcast, we do send out a monthly update.
Smoozing here. Okay.
We do send out a Kearney County update every month. The state office, I think, sends out at least one quarterly. And then we do a few, you try to get it, you know, on radio spots or maybe in the local paper. We try to get the information out, Richard. So we try to, we do our best to get the information out to folks, but, you know, they're responsible for their farming operations. So it's, you know, I like to encourage them to take that, accept that responsibility. And if there's things that have to be done, give us a call. We'll make sure that we get it done. We'll do everything we can to help them with that.
Okay. And again, we've been visiting with Mark Gowdy and Chevelle Bowman from the FSA office. Both of you, I hope you've had fun.
Yes, thank
you. It's been a blast. Thank you, Richard.
I know I like to joke around and stuff, so I hope I caught you. I'm sorry, Chevelle.
No, that's okay. Good experience.
We like to have fun, but we also want to make sure that the information is getting out there. So I hope everybody's enjoyed listening to the podcast today. We hope to have Mark back and future guests as well. I've been learning a lot of stuff that I didn't know, so I appreciate you guys coming in. So that's you're adding to my knowledge by doing this, so I do appreciate that. I'm supposed to have some type of knowledge, so I need to gain more. The more you know, as they say on the commercials.
That's right. The more you grow.
All right. Well, that's going to be it. Thank you again for both coming in.
Thank you, Richard.
And well, that's going to do it for us. Everybody out there, have fun and a safe week as you visit with your friends and family. For Kearney County Library, this is Richard. We are located at 101 East Prairie Street, catty corner from the Lakin Elementary School. If you need to get in touch with the library, our phone number is 355-6674. For additional library information, you can visit our website at kearneycolib.info, kearneycolib.info, or you can visit our Facebook page listed under Kearney County Library. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We look forward to seeing you at the library.